50. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and you're more than welcome to join us. We're going to talk about cars and stuff like that. So the phone number is easy, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And if you call in now, you usually have a pretty good chance of getting in, because later on in the show it gets kind of busy, and the last 45 minutes is really busy. So it's a two-hour show, and you're welcome to join us. And if you want me to settle an argument between you and your husband, I'm happy to do that. I typically side with the wife because that's the safest way to do it. Speaking of wives, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Oh, you know what? Let me turn you up.
Good morning.
Hang on. Can you talk again? Oh, for whatever reason, I have messed this up again. You know what I mean? I have just messed it up again. Let's try, I don't know.
That's okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know where you went, but I'll find you at the break. Anyway, 602-508-0960. I want to tell you about a friend of mine that runs a really nice shop. And as a matter of fact, there's lots of guys out there that are in the Phoenix area that run good shops. And one of them is Tom Blackwell at 40th Street and Deer Valley. Or no, Greenway, 40th Street and Greenway. I'm looking at the other address, and it's nevertheless, 40th and Greenway, since, oh gosh, probably he's been in business 25 years for sure. And if you live in that area, he's a pretty good guy. He knows what he's talking about. He's principled. He knows right from wrong. And the right from wrong is not necessarily related to the customers. It's related to staff. So it's knowing that what you've been told might not be the truth, or what you've been told you know is the truth. So that's what it's all about, is knowing right from wrong in the auto repair industry. So Blackwell Automotive, 40th and Greenway, and he covers my North Scottsdale area pretty good, my Northeast Phoenix and North Scottsdale area. So for those of you that are looking for a good shop, then Blackwell Auto would be a good guy. Hey, Gil, can you hear me?
Oh, I can hear you.
Oh, okay. All right. I just wanted to make sure that we were connected.
Oh, absolutely.
Anyway, 602-508-0960. I've got a couple of things that I want to tell you about, and as soon as I find the paperwork, I'll figure it out. But no, it's not there. It's not there. Here it is. I got it. I wrote some stuff for a local television station, and the idea was what is it that you can do that's really dumb with respect to your car? So it's kind of a funny segment, but it's not serious. So it's do you want to die in your car? This is a list from the car guy. So we'll start with a couple. If you let your 70s car running in the garage, you can die in your car. If you have a 2000 or newer car, you might die of hunger before you die of exhaust fumes. If you want to die in your car, don't wear your seatbelt. I can tell you that as we continue to work with insurance companies and lawyers about car wrecks, the common denominator of a death in a car wreck seems to be the seatbelt, and I don't think there's anything that's second. And then when it comes to seatbelts, don't insist the passengers wear their seatbelts, because you're not going to get hurt as they fly around the inside of your car during a crash. And it's not uncommon for the accident guys at the scene to have a tough time to determine who's driving the car if nobody was wearing the seatbelts. And if you want to die in your car, ignore the train crossing lights and arms. Drive fast, well over the speed limit. And then, if you want to get into trouble, then if you want to get even with one of those people that accidentally merges into your lane, remember that road rage almost always sends both drivers to jail. If you want to die in your car, ignore your tires. Just drive them until you can see the air inside. You want to die in your car? Ignore the dashboard airbag light. It's important for you to know that it's not going to work when the light is on. So if you have an airbag light on, the airbag system is down. So you got to strap your kids in, and I don't need to expand on that. The hurt and the pain, if something happens and you should have seated them in an appropriate car seat or belted them in, is I don't have to explain that to you. And when you have an accident, don't come out of your car and insist in front of the police and the paramedics and everything, insist that the other driver did something until you look at the car and see if they've got a dash cam. Because the dash cam in the black box pretty much tells everybody how the accident occurred. And then use your cell phone as much as you can. Here's some math for you. At 55 miles an hour, you're traveling the length of a football field in 3.5 seconds. And time yourself when you're using your phone. You look down, then you look up, and you look down, and then you look up. During those periods of time, you're traveling really fast. So if you can cover a football field in 3.5 seconds, then you still have to stop after you identify the hazard. And there's a good chance you won't stop before you hit the hazard. So when you're driving and you're on your phone, just understand you don't have a chance if there's some hazard that presents itself in front of you, because the reaction time and the ability of your car to go from 55 to 0 or 45 to 0 will all play a big part in that. So really put your cell phone down. You owe it to your family. You owe it to the other drivers. And ignore the warnings on your off-road vehicle, because they don't really apply to you. It doesn't hurt to hit a tree at 40 miles an hour if you're really tough. And then when your wife or you or your girlfriend decides to act up or have an argument, just stop in your lane of the freeway to finish the argument. Don't pull off or take the exit. And when your brake pedals sink into the floor every time you stop, just ignore that. It won't make any difference. And for those of you that's tough enough and savvy enough to pull the radiator cap off your radiator, don't put your hands on the upper hose and feel how hot the coolant is, because once you remove the radiator cap, you'll know how hot the coolant is. And here's one. If your throttle were to stick in your car, what would you do? What would you do? Think about that. Now, most people say that they would shut the car off. That's okay. If that comes to your mind first, then that's okay. The problem with that is that when you turn the key off, you lose power steering and power brakes. So that's not the best idea. Here's the best idea. Put it in neutral. Who cares what happens after neutral? And everything, shoot, for the last 15 years, the computer will not let the engine blow up. There's an upper level, so when it reaches this certain RPM, the engine just won't let it go further. But what do you care? So if you shift it into neutral, you have power steering and power brakes. You coast off to the side of the road, you're in neutral. You come to a stop, and then you put it in park and you shut the car off. That's really important. Turning the key off when you're going down the road is second best. Just shift it into neutral. Forget the sound of the engine. Just shift it into neutral. Turn on your right turn signal. Pull off the side of the road. Then shut the car off. That's really important. Not too long ago, there was a young lady who had a throttle stick on her. And during that period of time, she burned the brakes clear out of her car. There was no brakes left on the car as she attempted to slow her car down from in excess of 70 miles an hour. And when she was on the phone with people that were trying to help her, they didn't give her the very best advice. And as a result, she crashed and died. So again, if your throttle sticks, throw it in neutral. Put it in neutral however you want to do it. You'll have power steering and brakes, coast off the side of the road, and shut your key off. That's all you have to do. And then if you want to live your last minute in your car, ignore your repair shop when they suggest that you have a severe problem with your brakes. Just ignore them. They don't know what they're talking about. And last but not least, if you decide that you want to die in your car, let your drunk buddy drive your drunk butt home. Those are Mark Salem's list of
2 minutes.
What happens if you decide to die in your car. This is the mistakes that most people make. I also want to tell you that I've taken some flack recently about nitrogen in the tires. I've been of the opinion that the nitrogen in the palm of your hand is just shy of 80%. And that oftentimes the machines that they use to inflate your tires are incapable of that concentration. So I'm of the opinion that no matter where you get your air in your tires, you still have 80%. And when we've tested tires with a device that actually tells us how much nitrogen is in your tire, we rarely find anything north of 90. Every once in a while we'll find something around 95, but we never see 100. There's no way you can blow up a tire and ensure that you have 100% nitrogen. So I catch a lot of flack about
that.
1 minute. But somebody said something to me the other day that made a lot of sense. They said, I carry nitrogen for my customers' tires because they ask for it. So it's a customer service. I'm providing a customer service. Then he said this, which I'm not quite sure this is the same. But he said, convenience stores sell cigarettes to people. And cigarettes are not in their best interest and not good for their health. But they do it because that's what the customer wants. They sell liquor to people. So it's not up to you, Mark Salem, to tell everybody that nitrogen is not good for their tires. Leave the rest of us alone because we're providing a service. No different than Circle K provides cigarettes and beer. So it's a service. So I lay that on the table for you, and I've already apologized to all the guys that were mad at me. I still don't sell it. I'm not going to sell it. And it's just not something that I think is important. It's not on my radar. So if a shop wants to sell nitrogen, I don't condemn them for that. And I understand now that it's a customer service. Now, I don't know what the percentage of them is customer service and the percentage of them is that's going to push this high profit item on you, but you can decide that for yourself. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We'll be back in a minute.
The Mechanic Radio.
Well, welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and I'm here at your service. And before we talk about anything else, we're going to take a call. We're going to take Steve. Steve, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. How are you doing today?
I'm good. I've been better, but today's a good day.
Yes, indeed. I had a little problem crop up yesterday. I had an afternoon doctor appointment. I drive a 2005 Dodge Grand Caravan, and it's up at 197,000 miles, so the best part of it's behind, but it doesn't give me any real problems by and large. So I pull into the driveway, and I hear this whining sound, and I thought it was my neighbor, you know, with his table saw going. That's kind of the sound it emitted. So I've never encountered that before, so first inclination is to pop the hood, look at the engine, see if I can see anything under there. When I open the car door, I realize it is not the neighbor's table saw, for sure. Go around the front of the car, and I look down the engine, and the sound is diminished. So I walk around the car, and it sounds like it's coming from the passenger seat in the rear, the second set of seats.
Okay.
So I opened those doors. Then I thought, well, is the air conditioner, is the fan on back there, and maybe it's the bearings going out or something? Well, at least as indicated on the dashboard, there was no passenger fan going. And, of course, it was hotter than Hades out there yesterday, and I finally turned the car off, and, of course, the noise stopped. When I did turn the car off, it seemed like I heard a click, click, click. And I was happened to be looking at the speedometer and the tach, and they the needle kind of bounced a little bit. And I start the car back up, and the whine reoccurs. So I decided I better just get that car in the garage and say grace over it until next week. But I quickly went on the Internet, and I think...
Okay, well, we stop right there because I'm not interested in the Internet. It doesn't... I can't argue with somebody on the Internet, and I just can't do that. So have you come to a conclusion what it is or not?
I have no idea.
Okay. All right. I don't either. What you're describing to me is unusual. I don't know if I'm going to chase the speedometer or the tachometer bounce. I think what would really be better for you is learn how to duplicate the problem. What did you do differently? Go drive your car for 10 minutes. Come back home. Don't shut it off. See what happens. A noise is there's nobody in the world that's going to be able to tell you what the noise is based on what you told us right now. And even if I let you go on for another 20 minutes, we just can't do noises. And the fact that you shut it off just means it's something electrical. Now, it could have been the fuel pump in the tank. It could be a lot of things. I don't know where your gas level was or if it was a quarter or if it was lower than that, because the fuel pump sometimes, if it's not completely submerged in the gasoline, it's not cooled properly, and you have 200,000 miles on your car, and I don't know how many times you've replaced the fuel pump. But it's just something that you're going to have to determine how to make it happen, because you can't take it to my shop or anybody else's shop and say, you need to find this noise, because if it doesn't happen to us, we're not going to be able to find it. But if you say, ha, I shut it off with the air conditioning and it does it every time, that's very helpful and it saves you a lot of money. So I'm sorry, I just can't do it. And to take time to talk about somebody on YouTube or somebody on the Internet who presents themselves as somebody who, and I don't want you to spend money on somebody's guest that you've never met before. And I don't want you to tell me how to fix your car because somebody on the Internet told you this is what I need to do. That's a bad way to start a relationship. But good luck to you. And I'm sorry, that's the best I can do. Tom, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hi, thanks for taking my call, Mark.
You bet.
I have a 2001 Lexus ES300, and it's showing a knock sensor code. That's it. And just with your experience with over 200,000 miles, could that be the harness cable or the actual knock sensors? I guess there's two in one on bank one, one on bank two.
Okay. That's not the question. And let me offer you the question. The real question is can I see the knock sensor work? It's just the computer says it sees a knock sensor. Not too long ago, there was a broken power steering pump on a Chevrolet Astro van. And it was making noise. And because it's mounted to the motor, the broken power steering mount, every time they turn hard right or hard left, it would tax the power steering pump, which would make the bracket flex. And the knock sensor was saying, hey, slow down the timing because I hear a ping. So what needs to happen is somebody needs to go in there and plug in a scanner and look at the sensor. Then if the sensor's talking, then we have to determine where it's talking from. If a sensor's not talking and I hit the engine with a hammer, I grab your air conditioning mount and I hit it with a hammer, I better see the knock sensor raise its hand and say, hey. So first thing we have to do is see if the sensor can see what it's supposed to see and report what it's supposed to report. Then we're going to look at all kinds of stuff like exhaust leaks. We're going to look at broken mounts, broken power. We've seen bad air conditioning compressors that are sounding bad fool the knock sensor. So I think you'd be guessing if you replace the harness and the knock sensor. I think you're far better served to have somebody diagnose it for you, because the code is wrong more than 75% of the time. The code just says, the computer just says, this is the area I'm seeing some data that I don't like. And right. that's all that's going on. So
2 minutes.
I think you're going to spend $75 to $125 to have somebody tell you exactly what the repair is. Then at that point, if you want to do it yourself, then go ahead. And that's not right. a bad idea.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, you might be on something. I do have a bad motor mount. So
okay.
You.
Now, if it's metal to metal, yes. So if you can actually sit in the car and either drive it in reverse, and you put it in driver reverse, and your foot's not on the throttle, and you feel a metal to metal throughout the car, I don't know that I'd replace the motor mount hoping it would fix it, but you need to replace it anyway.
it's all the rubber shot is out of it, the top one.
Okay. Oh, okay. Okay. Well, then what you do is that's just a rocker mount. Just disconnect it and drive it for a while.
See what happens.
And see what happens. If the code goes away, then you've hit the nail on the head. Okay?
Okay,
thank you. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Automatic Transmission Exchange has been in Phoenix, 40th Street in Washington. Phil's been around since 1968. He's worked on the very version 1 of transmissions all the way to version 2751. So the new electronics simply do things with electronics where the old transmissions did it with foot. Your foot pedal, your accelerator pedal, engine vacuum, looking at this RPM, all that kind of stuff helped the transmission make a decision. But today, we have a bunch more inputs that are far more precise. So Phil says if your transmission is making a noise or doing something, you stop by other than Monday morning or Friday night, and we'll walk with you. We'll take a ride with you. If you can make it happen, we want to take a ride. But if you can't make it happen, we just wait till a little longer. That's Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington. If you want to call in, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We'll be back in about 5. Welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem, and sitting next to me is Renee, and her microphone works. Hey.
Hey, good morning.
Hey. Good morning, good morning. We actually just saw one another in the last 10 minutes. She just got back home. She was at working this morning, and she was late for radio, so I'm not going to fire her if it's okay with you guys. Larry Harker's Auto Repair has been around since 1967 at 38th Avenue and Indian School. Bob and Ellen, his wife, run the operation. Ellen runs the front. Bob runs the back. He's a really good diagnostician. He's one of those guys that you can wave the red flag in front of, and he has the tenacity to track down your problem. So if your windshield wipers only flap at a particular song at a particular station, he'll figure that out. He's that good. So if he does oil changes and everything else. But Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School, a real go-to place. Let's go to Larry. Larry, we're going to start, and I should have said this at the beginning, we start with your make and model. We're doing a good job with that. And then we talk about symptoms. So, Larry, how can I help you?
Thank you, Mark. I have a 2011 Z06 LS7.
It's kind of a slow car. Wouldn't you want something that would perhaps get to 60 miles an hour in less than a year?
Yeah, my wife hates it.
And you know something? You know, I got to tell you something. We have a 2006 Z06 twin turbo, and the lady sitting here next to me will not even ride with me.
No. I know your pain.
Oh, it is. Anyway, tell me what you got.
So here's my concern. I'm a second owner, and ever since I bought it, I've changed my own oil, and I've looked at the oil filter. It runs fine. Oil pressure's great. It's fine. I can't find anything wrong with it. But every time I change the oil, it has 40,000 miles now, I get these finite specks of aluminum in the filter. I mean, quite a bit. They're not large. They're like pencil dot size, maybe even a little smaller. But there's a lot of them. Okay. Should I be concerned?
Well, let's look at the top of the filter. Okay, I want you to visualize the top of the filter. We have the rubber gasket all the way around, and then we have the hole with the big hole, the threaded hole, and then all the small holes. Where are you seeing that?
I'm seeing it inside the filter when I cut it and I spread it out.
So you're cutting the filter open?
Yes.
Okay, is that on the inside of the pleats or the outside of the pleats?
On the inside.
Okay. I'll answer your question to put you at ease. I want you to change your oil, and at 2,000 miles, I want you to pull a sample. You can suck it out of the dipstick tube, or you can, crack open the drain plug a little bit. That's your first sample. And now, how long do you go between oil changes?
I've been going about 4,000 miles.
Bingo. So you're going to pull a sample at 2, a sample at 4. You're going to get on the internet. You're going to say oil analysis. You're going to send them the information. They'll want to know year, make, model car, and the miles and all that. But you're going to have a 2,000 and a 4,000. And here's the deal. We'll find metal. We'll find water. We'll find all kinds of stuff in the first one. What we don't want to do is we don't want a growth in the second one. Does that make sense? So if we have 0.2 aluminum, and I'm using stupid numbers with stupid metals, then we better have 2.2 in the next one as well. You're an unusual person to figure that out. And in reality, everybody's oil filter would scare them if we took it apart and unpleated the filter. And it's doing it's doing what it's supposed to do. Now, you didn't say anything about intermittent oil pressure. You didn't say anything about a tapping noise every once in a while. You didn't say anything about a knocking noise first thing in the morning that goes away in 6 seconds. You have none of the symptoms that would scare me.
2 minutes.
So if you and I decided to race somewhere and drive safely together, I'd go with you, and I'd leave my AAA card at home, and you could leave yours at home as well. So I'm not real concerned about that. But I also know that you don't drive that car as if you had a full hot cup of coffee between your legs.
No.
Okay.
No.
And so you don't drive that car like your mother drives her car or your wife drives her car. So if it sheds a little bit of metal, it's just no big deal. And if your car is shedding metal, mine's shedding twice as much. And it has everything to do with how you drive it. And so,
but he should be worried if the second one is much higher than the first one.
The two oil analysis would tell him everything. And they're also going to give you ranges. So they'll say the range is 1 to 5. And he's sitting there at a half. Mm-hmm. Or he's sitting there at 1.2. And then at the next sample, he's at 1.2. So we haven't had any growth. So that's what it's all about. Okay?
Excellent. Thank you.
All right. You bet. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Specs in oil.
And we get those little plastic, almost like a medicine container, and put the oil in. And it doesn't have to be in anything special to send it in. Something that seals. And
he could use a prescription bottle that's empty, that has a good cap on it and stuff like that. But most of those places will send you two oil samples with a prepaid box and all that other jazz.
Yeah.
You put the oil in there. Usually it's best to grab the oil after the engine's warmed up and the oil has been mixed around.
Okay.
That's the better thing. And obviously, it's not going to be easy to take the drain plug out, but with a pair of gloves on, you can pull the drain plug out slowly until it starts weeping and just sit there and wait until your oil sample's full. If you lose control of the oil drain plug, you're going to have a big mess. The other possibility is to drop a very small hose down the dipstick tube and put one of those turkey basters on the end of it and just suck the oil out of the dipstick tube. So those are the two kinds of things that you can do. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are open, and you're welcome to call in. And what are you pointing at me for?
It's time to take a break.
I know that.
Oh.
But Gil doesn't yell at me as much as you do. Just remember, the 20 and the 40 brakes are just a little bit flexible. It's the 30 and the 58 that I got to hit on the money.
I haven't been here for a while. I got to keep you on track.
Yeah. Okay, when we come back, I'm going to talk to those that are thinking about buying an off-road vehicle, a four-seater, a side-by-side, a one-seater, all those things that you ride down in the river bottom and stuff like that. I have some information for you. So 602-508-0960. Forty-four minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question or a car problem, I'm happy to help you with it. 602-508-0960. Start off with your make and model, and then we'll talk symptoms. What's going on? What's it doing? What it's not doing? And all that kind of stuff. Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is a Better Business Bureau A-plus rated shop. Nate has great technicians. He's a good business person himself, and he's a great diesel technician. Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is die-hard service, repair, and parts for diesel, foreign and domestic, light diesel vehicles, specifically trucks. They're just south of I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. They sell parts on their website 24 hours a day, so if you're interested in some fancy air filter or something like that for your diesel, then you probably should go to Strictly Diesel's website and take a look at what he talks about, because most of us, and the real question there is Nate, what have you got on your truck? Mm-hmm. And that's really what you want to do is whatever, whoever's you're going to trust, you just ask him what's on your truck. Okay, do you have anything that you wanted to bring up?
No. Have you been behaving yourself the last few weeks I've been gone? No, I haven't been gone. I just haven't been on with you because you've had some of your...
I get in a little trouble every once in a while, but why would that be any different for the rest of my life?
That's normal.
Yeah, that's really kind of normal.
That's right.
So we're talking about off-road vehicles. And this, we're just on the cusp of, you know, we're in kind of the middle of the summertime. There's a lot of people out there that are interested. Here's the problem with many of the people who sell cars, trucks, off-road vehicles. What happens is the vehicle's $5,000, but after the $5,000, and I'm using that as an example, we have freight, we have get ready, we have assembly, we have a special wax, we have window tint, we have bed liners, we have what they call pack, and this is where we pack it. Then the one that really wads up my underwear is dock fees, and you'll see dock fees of $150 to $300. And the dock fees represent the time it takes for them to take that car, put your information in the computer, and assign you that car. It also is all the buttons the young lady or the young man have to push. I think that's a cost of living or cost of business, but I'm just not the smartest screwdriver in the drawer. So as a result of that, your $5,000 car becomes $1,500 more. And then you'll pay sales tax and license plates on it. There's a place in Casa Grande called Adrenaline Motorsports. And he has Can-Am and Kawasaki. But the Can-Am is really hot right now. So they've got two-seaters and they've got side-by-sides. They've got small four-seaters and big four-seaters. You can call them up. You can chop your butt off all over Phoenix. And you find what you want. You call Adrenaline Motorsports and just say to them, how much out the door? I'm telling you right now, it's going to be the off-road vehicle plus sales tax. That's it. If you want plates on it, you'll have to pay plates. But that's it. There's no pack. There's no games. And he ended up being number two in the nation not too long ago, and he attributes that to just simply selling off-road vehicles the way they ought to be sold. So he's not charging you for all of his overhead. He's not charging you because his wife had her fingernails done once a week. He's not doing all that. So he has people that will do that. But if you're going to be buying that, then Adrenaline Motorsports in Casa Grande on Piper Avenue, just call them up. They'll give you a price over the phone. They'll tell you, write your check before you leave, and it'll be good when you get here. That's exactly what happens. The reason I'm telling you about this is because John, who owns the business, and I, we went to high school together in 1913, long before they had off-road vehicles.
13?
Well, we've been old friends for a long time. 50 years?
Yeah, probably.
40 or 50 years. And we're two peas of a pod, and I respect his business skills. And not too long ago when him and I were together, he told me this.
Mm-hmm.
And so I made a couple of calls to see it for myself.
Right.
And there's no question.
Yeah.
So you ask, what's the specifics of that? Some of them won't even tell you. They say, come on down.
Oh, yeah.
So if I say, well, you just tell me, because the scooters, the side-by-side is $5,000, and how are we now at $6,700?
Right.
Oh, it's just all that stuff. And there's some stuff that you may not want. Aftermarket warranties, you may not. And they have this exterior treatment, and they can call it anything. They can call it a desert protection package. They can tell you it's a sun reflection package. But in the vernacular of our world, it's called mop and glow. Okay? They're literally going to take some fancy fluid and mop your car with it. And that doesn't mean that it's going to last a day, a week, a month, a year, or 10 years. It's just going to look pretty when you pick it up. So, as a consumer advocate, I tell you this, because it's important for you to know. Now, you don't have to believe me.
Yeah, but it's the same way with cars. They add all those fees onto cars when you go, and people get so frustrated with all that extra charge.
Well, and the answer, well, the story that I tell when we talk about that is, mm-hmm. is our daughter, Andy.
Mm-hmm.
She had decided that we need to get rid of the old customer service van that takes people home.
Mm-hmm.
And so we sat down and talked about what we want. And then that we wanted a Dodge.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we wanted doors on both sides. We wanted captain's chairs and we wanted rear air. Mm-hmm. So we can put 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 customers in it and not have them sitting on top of one another.
Right.
So then she says, okay, well, I'm going to go shop it. And I challenged her. I said, I bet you can't buy it for the sticker, the number on the bottom of the sticker. Mm-hmm. That includes sales tax and license. And you can't buy a year old car.
Right.
So not fair for you to come in here with a year old car and say, hey, I hit the number you said. This is a new car. This is a present year car. And damned if she didn't do it. She walked into my office. Her feet were about 10 feet off the floor. She tossed that piece of paper on my desk, tossed the keys on my desk, and walked out. And I was proud of her.
Yeah.
I was proud of her. Now, she said I didn't go to just one place.
Sure.
I had to go to 3 or 4 places
mm-hmm.
in order. But she says I did the same thing every time. I looked at the van. I identified it's something that we want.
Right.
She says I went and drove the van.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to make. And then I said to them, how much do I have to write my check for? And and even before that, she'd say, see this number right here on the window sticker? I'll give you that, and I'll walk out the door.
Mm-hmm.
And then they began to negotiate. And she says, we were a long way away when we first started negotiating.
Sure.
But she says, this place that I bought it from, which happens to be a Chrysler dealership in Tempe, she says, they understood.
Right.
And they said, you're going to write a check. There's not going to be any financing. But see, they make money on financing, so they're kind of happy about that. So if you finance it for 6 months and then pay it off, you're home free.
Right.
Because they just want the financing because they get a couple of points on the front side or something like that.
And the aftermarket warranties that you love.
Oh, yeah. You know, people do it for the peace of mind.
Sure.
I understand that. And mm-hmm. and it's their money and everything else. But they don't have the perspective that I do. The perspective that we do. It's a hassle beyond belief. Every single time you bring your car in and we have to deal with the aftermarket warranty. We already know that they're going to not accept responsibility for 50%. The other day some lady came in and she had a radiator that was bad. It was leaking. And it was covered. So we called up and we said, here's the VIN. Here's the mileage. We'll send pictures if you want. Here's who we are. Here's how we work. She needs a radiator. And here's our parts, labor, shop supplies, coolant, environmental charges. Here's our total out-the-door price.
Mm-hmm.
He said, well, I'll get back with you. So he calls back and he goes, well, we're not going to cover that. And we said, okay, why not? Well, she didn't have her transmission service done at the appropriate time. So the obvious question is no, this is a radiator.
Mm-hmm.
This has nothing to do with the transmission. Oh, Mr. Salem, you're wrong. Okay, tell me how I'm wrong. Well, there's a transmission cooler in the radiator. And I said, yes, that's true. I said, but it's not leaking. So I don't have a cooling system full of transmission fluid. That's not the problem. I have a tank leaking one side of the radiator. No, she didn't do her transmission service on time, and therefore that voids her. We're not going to cover her radiator. And there was nothing we could do. And if you ask to talk to a supervisor, you might as well just stick your head in a meat grinder. But they just wouldn't cover it. And
mm-hmm.
so she got on them, and they wouldn't cover it. And they pointed to page 42 on line 16 that said something about you have to be up on your maintenance of related items.
Mm-hmm.
So even though the radiator had nothing to do with the transmission, that was the excuse they used. Then they come in, and they want to send the part to us, and it's a cheap part. They want us to warranty it. How silly is that? I didn't make a dime on the part, and they want me to warranty it.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes what they want to do is they want to say, we'll send you the part. Well, I got the car on the rack, and their steering rack is out of it, so I can't lower it to the ground and push it outside. So, you know, will it be an hour or two? Well, it could be 3 days. So you want to tie up a rack with your car for 3 days while you send me some cheap rack from Nicaragua. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's that kind of thing. And then the customer almost always pays shop supplies, environmental charges, sales tax, and almost always, Freon. They almost always pay for Freon.
Yeah.
So there's these hidden things in your aftermarket warranty. And I've said to people, I'm not opening this up to all of our listeners, but I've said to people, how much is the payment? Well, the payments for 3 years is $312 a month. Fine, I'll take the deal. You give me $312 a month, I'll abide by that contract in your hand, and I'll take care of all your repairs based on that contract.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a silly, hopefully it drives home the point that
right.
I'm going to make more money.
Yeah.
If it's $200 or $300 to put that money in the bank and just simply pay for your repairs, you can't really say on a $500 bill that, you know, $400 or all $500 is covered by your warranty. It's not going to be. You're still going to have to pay some other smaller stuff.
Right.
But that's how, yeah, and you're right.
But you'd have a better chance of getting it covered if you kept the money and put it in a savings. And most people won't do that, and that's probably why they end up just buying it.
Well, they can finance it too.
Sure.
So they can roll that into the cost of the car and finance it. So those are just personal decisions. We're just sharing with you the dark side of the aftermarket warranties. And I also want to tell you folks, we have had plenty of opportunities over 39. My wife and I have been in business 39 years together. Mm-hmm. We've had lots of opportunities where somebody will walk in downstairs and ask to speak to the boss or whatever. So they're ushered up to our office and they put their dog and pony show on. You remember, we make a lot of money if we participate in the sales of those.
Sure.
If you hand out our brochures, if you talk to the people, if they have a one big bill, then hand them our brochure. Tell them this is a really good deal. Tell them that they should buy this policy because this repair would have cost you $175 less.
Mm-hmm.
So there's lots of financial benefits for the salespeople in those. But in reality, there's lots of financial benefits for a lot of the vendors that want us to use their products.
Sure.
So if you use our oil, I'm going to give you some 10% or $10 off coupons, but you need to put your price here, and you need to do this and do that. And basically, they're basically giving the $10 out of my pocket.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're saying, okay, well, I'm going to give you a coupon, but you have to do it this way. So I know who's paying for it.
Right.
So, but right now I just saw not too long ago that we have a Havoline, a coupon book.
Right.
And I asked Andy, I said, so what's the catch? And she says, ironically enough, there is no catch.
Mm-hmm.
She says, we have to make sure that we identify what oil we put in their car. And we already do anyway.
Sure, it's right on their work order.
Yeah, so it says Havoline 5 quarts of 020 or 520 or whatever it calls for. So that $10 coupon, she says, I'm now stapling to the work order. Then telling them, the next oil change, bring this coupon back. Okay. Otherwise, they'll lose it.
Or they send it in and they get one in the mail or something like that, yes.
And I think that is the one. It's once you get the repair done or the oil change done, you just send a copy of the work order and I think that's it.
The little coupon thing that they give you, and then they send them a $10 off voucher for their next oil change, yeah.
And frankly, I don't know if you're going to be bombarded with marketing strategies from all these different vendors. And if you do, then you can certainly decide to say no. 602-508-0960. We'll be back for another hour. 602-508-0960. And the lines are going to get busy, so now's the time. I'm Mark Salem. Renee's sitting next to me. We'll be back right after this. Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. I'm here at your service. If you have a car question or car problem, just give me a call, and I'll do my best to help you and work with you to try to figure out what we could do next. And I'll do the best I can to guide you. Obviously, I can't fix your car over the phone or over the radio, but there are times I can get pretty doggone close. And it really depends on you. So when I ask you a question, there are three answers. Yes, no, or I don't know. And all three of them are accepted, you know, acceptable to me. So we work around it. The radio show has everything to do with questions and answers. So you tell me your make and model. Tell me what's going on. I'll ask you some questions, and together we'll kind of narrow it down. If anything, I'll help you to determine what you say to your shop to minimize the diagnostic costs. Because if they have to drive it till it happens, that may not be something that you want to do. Maybe it's wait till it gets worse and easier to find. Especially on something that doesn't light your dashboard up with red lights. Sometimes that's the very best thing to do, is just wait till it gets worse and easier to find. Or I can make it happen when I do this. And it's not anything bad for a consumer or customer to ask the shop to assign one of their technicians for a test drive. That's not unusual, and that's not unreasonable either. Now, obviously Monday mornings and Friday afternoons, that's kind of a bad idea. But Tuesday at 10 o'clock in the morning is just perfect, or something like that after the morning rush. So the lines are wide open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and you're welcome to join us. The lines are going to get kind of busy. Was that an air gun in the background?
It was.
Okay, hold on just a minute, and let me bring you back up. Was that an air gun in the background?
I think it was, but okay. Sometimes I hear those things, and it's not correct.
Well, you've always had noises in your head.
I have. Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Gil, was that an air gun? Oh, there it was again. I'm ready.
It was. Your first caller is Joe.
Joe, good morning. We're not laughing at you. We're laughing at each other. I hope you understand that.
Yes, that's fine. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, you were talking, when you were talking to the guy with the vet that had the was looking at the oil, and then you had mentioned that when you start it up and it knocks for about 6 seconds and then it quiets down, I'm experiencing that. I've got a 2001 Chevy Silverado with 302,000 miles on it.
Okay, 302,000 miles.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, you just beat every Ford record I've ever seen. I'm kidding.
My wife drives the truck, though.
So. Oh, well, that's
that nice. Explains it. That's, there you go.
That's the reason. Then you got 300,000 miles. Do you know that 300,000 miles is 12 times around the equator? That's how far she's driven. She must have a boyfriend that lives in a different area code or zip code or something like that. Nevertheless, here's what I want you to do. When you start it up, I want you just to listen to the noise and determine how long it lasts. Okay, that's kind of important. Number two, I want you to start it up sometimes in park and sometimes in neutral and see if that changes the noise. I also want you to start it up, and when it's doing the noise, go into reverse. Just keep your foot on the brake. Just shift it to reverse. And then the next morning, shift it to drive. And here's what I'm thinking. With 300,000 miles on it, this could have a broken flywheel, and it's more appropriately called a flex plate. And that creates a knocking noise, and we can usually change that noise when we start messing with the shifter when the noise is happening. So if you say, I got this knocking noise, but it gets really bad when I put it in drive, but it's not there in reverse, and it goes away. Well, at that point, we know it's not oil related, it's not a rod bearing, it's not a main bearing. It's something it's unrelated to all the stuff that you're sweating. So that's kind of just move the shifter around. How long does it last? Is it 2 seconds? Is it 5 seconds? Is it 10 seconds? And what changes it? Now, if she starts it up and it's knocking and she revs the motor and the knock goes with the motor, that's important. But if she revs the motor and the noise has the same rhythm, and it didn't go up with the, you know, stab of the throttle, that's important.
No, it gets worse. It gets louder as you apply the throttle.
Okay.
And then it eventually. So, like if I start driving, okay, it'll be more pronounced. And then it'll. So I just idle along and then it drops off.
Okay. So am I assuming that you're starting it up, you're backing out of your driveway, and you're getting 3, 4, 5 houses away?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Now, what kind of – do you change your own oil? You have somebody do it for you?
I have the shop do it. They've got a synthetic blend, a 530.
Okay. I want you to have your oil changed with a 30 weight.
straight 30?
Yes. Yes.
Oh.
I mean,
oh, okay.
That's a good diagnostic tool. And let me change the question. Mark, if you had a 300,000-mile Silverado, would you be putting 530 blend in it? And the answer is double heck no. Well,
okay.
Why not? That motor's been around the world more times than I've been alive. That motor's worn out. What are we trying to feed it premium oil for, thinking that it's going to love us more? Thinking it's going to last another 300,000 miles? So if we put 30 weight in it and all of a sudden you go, holy mackerel, it cut the noise in half or it cut 90% of the noise off, then, yeah, we've got an oil pressure problem somewhere. So if we thicken up the oil and it goes away, then what's the matter with that?
Yeah.
So, you know, we can determine where the noise is coming from if we have the truck for a couple. And I talk talking our industry. The repair shop can determine where it's coming from. Because we'll just take one spark plug off in the morning. So we do one spark plug, and then it knocks. We shut it off, and we come back to it an hour later. And we disconnect another spark plug, and all of a sudden the noise changes. And then we disconnect the third and the fourth one, and the noise is still there. So we know it's related to the one where it changed the noise when we took the spark and combustion away from it. So though now you could also do an oil sample. You could also do what we talked about the other guy, you know, go 1,000 miles, pull a sample, go another 1,000 miles, pull a sample, send them into the laboratories that are all over the internet and let them see what the growth is.
Now, so, it occurs, on the cold winter mornings.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know if that makes a difference.
It changes. You kind of cut out. So is it get better or worse on a cold winter morning?
It's worse. It's louder.
Ooh.
And in the hot weather, it's not as noticeable.
Okay. That's kind of confusing. I'm not doubting what you're saying, but that throws a whole new tilt to it. But typically what I say to this is you know, if it was an oil pressure problem, colder oil and winter would make the noise, it would change the noise dramatically for the better. So I can't answer why in the wintertime it's actually better, but you're still using 530. Because 530
right.
is a cold weather oil as well as a hot weather oil. It's both. So, but I think there's sometimes we have questions that can only be answered after we fix the car. So people say, you know, well, why does it only happen on the AM station at 17 volume? Okay, I'm not going to chase that. I can answer that after I fix your problem. But I'm going to just
sure.
chase the noise and not get sidetracked and go off on some tangent that really is not going to, it's not going to point me in the right direction. So I think, you know, the knock is going to either be the flywheel, it could be the harmonic balancers come loose, but the both of those would typically not go away. They may reduce in volume, but they would still be there. But an oil pressure problem or, one of the bearings that's worn a little bit more and it takes a few minutes for us to get the oil pressure up, that would change with a change of viscosity, so. Changing the viscosity, I think, would be the first thing that I would want you to do. Now, how often are you changing the oil with the 530?
About 30,000, 3,000, 4,000.
Okay. Well, with a blended oil like that, which is kind of the middle of the road, you can go between 5 and 6 to 7,500. Well, actually, you can go from 3 to 5. 3 to 5. Conventional oil is 3,000, and then a blended oil, or they call it a semi-synthetic, that can go between 3,000 and 5,000. And then the synthetic oils will go north of that till 10 or 12,000. But I think let's just do it this way. Let's just change the oil to a straight 30 weight and see what happens. I think that's
all
the
right,
best thing to do. Okay. Thank you very much, Joe. Thank you very much. Kurt's Auto Repair is up on I-17 and Bell Road. Kurt's has been on my radar screen for a long time because there's times that people will ask me about a car-related problem, and they live near Bell Road and I-17. Well, if I've got a shop there, I'm going to refer them to the shop, and there's been more than a couple of times that Kurt has pulled a rabbit out of his hat. and he's done a really good job in his diagnosis, and when he does the repair he sells, the problem goes away. And that's kind of the really important part of car repair, is conversation with the customer. Then you do symptom analysis. You try to determine what the symptom is telling you. Then you determine what you think is the repair. You bid the part and labor with the repair. But at the end of the day, you better go drive that vehicle to make sure that what you went in to fix is really gone. Because the real sin is that the customer spent $200 and you're on your final test drive and the problem's still there. That's kind of an embarrassing situation to be caught in. But Kurt's doesn't deal like that anyway. He's got ASE certified technicians, and between Eric, Jeff, and Kurt, they're all master technicians. So it's like having three very seasoned guys looking at your car. So if you're near I-17 and Bell Road, Kurt's is a great place. If you don't have a shop, Kurt's is a great place. And if you have a shop and you want to try somebody else, Kurt's is still a good place. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. 602-508-0960. We'll be back in a minute. After the hour, 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and we'll be taking callers in about 30 seconds. But Auto Dynamics is Sun City's largest and most trusted source for complete automotive services. Chuck Nide, who I've known since the 60s, owned it's family owned and operated, and Chuck opened it up in 1982, and now his son Derek has the reins. So if you're in Sun City and you don't have a good shop, or you're looking for a good shop, or you just got there, then Auto Dynamics is on the north side of Grand Avenue, just west of 99th Avenue. They'll treat you fair. They're not going to sell you unnecessary parts or unnecessary services. I promise. That's Auto Dynamics. Alex, you're first. How can I help you today?
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a 1995 Toyota Camry automatic, and when I was driving the other day, it broke down on me, and I heard a clunking noise coming all of a sudden in the middle of my drive. So I pull up to the side of the freeway, and my car wouldn't go anywhere even when I would press the gas. So when I got it to home, I tried putting it in the different gears, and I heard a clunking noise. And I, when I would put it in park, I would hear this really high pitch, a really, really loud grinding noise. It kind of sounds like if you put a piece of plastic up to a fan that's going really fast.
Okay.
It makes a noise when I put it in the park, and it also rolls when I put it in the park, so the parking brake doesn't work either. The emergency brake does not in park, and then, when I put it in gears,
okay,
it would make this.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, you've lost the connection between the transmission and the engine, and I don't know where you've lost it, but what you describe is called ratcheting. So it's kind of like putting your car in park when you're still doing 2 miles an hour. So that's what's going on with you. I don't know about the clunk. I don't care about the clunk. But you have perfectly described. Now, for instance, on a conventional car, because you can wrap your head around that a little bit better. On a conventional car, if we were to take and blow the drive shaft off of a pickup truck, then that's exactly what he would have. He'd put it into drive, and it might move, but the car doesn't move. And then when he goes to put it back in park, it's going to go, and it's going to be a ratcheting sound. So you could have blown one of the front drive axles off that Camry, or you could have got one joint of the four came apart, and that could be your clunk. The clunk you're hearing is half of the axle swinging out of perfection. So it's no longer spinning true. It's wobbling a lot and creating the noise. So that's what I think you've got going. If that's the case, then you're probably going to have to replace one of the axles. And if everything is good, you didn't create a whole bunch of damage that you're going to have to fix. If we got the axle banging around on the lower control arm and it didn't affect the alignment, then I wouldn't put one on it. So that's what I think. I think you did a good job in describing the noises. And I think that I'm really close to whatever the repair is.
Okay, so the I don't know too much about cars. But
okay,
check the axles. You said.
Well, the transmissions come disconnected, from the wheels, so to speak. So we've lost that connection. If you just if you just describe to them what you said to me, you know, I started up, everything's fine. I put it in drive. There's some noise there, but when I put it back in park, it sounds as though I'm trying to put it back in park at 5 miles an hour. So it's ratcheting. If that's good work, or it's like people cracking their knuckles real fast, or it's like putting a playing card with a clothespin on the bicycle tire we used to do when we were kids.
Right, right.
Okay, that's what I would do. What part of town do you live in?
I actually live in Los Angeles.
Okay, all right. So you know it's not going to make it back to Los Angeles.
Right. Well, I'm in Los Angeles right now, but I'm there.
All right. I understand. I think any general repair shop will be able to diagnose this in less than 15 minutes, and they're going to lift it up on the rack. They're going to see that one of the two axles is blown off the front of your Camry because you have front-wheel drive, and then they're going to bid the repair. I don't think. You didn't say anything about a bunch of fluid on the ground, and that's good because we didn't blow up the transmission, or we didn't blow up the transaxle because we'd have puked fluid all over the ground. So I think if you can tow it into the shop, and it would be great if you could follow it there, and then you could show the shop what you're talking about, that's a home run. Thank you, Alex. Thank you very much. I got to move on to Corky. Corky, how are you, and what can I do for you?
Good morning, Mark. I have a 1998 Jeep Wrangler.
Okay.
And I have it's got 108,000 miles, and when I go to start it when it's cold, it starts in about 2 to 3 seconds. Now, if I drive it for 10 or 15 minutes and go back to start it, it takes 5 to 7 seconds for it to catch.
Okay.
Any ideas?
Well, but it'll run at 60, 70, 80 miles an hour, yes?
Oh, no problem. No problem.
All right. So I'm going to eliminate the fuel pump. I'm going to eliminate the starvation of fuel, because if it had substandard fuel or if it had a starvation problem, it wouldn't do 60, 70, 80 miles an hour. So I'm thinking to myself that the cranking is telling me clearly, and the fact that it will run after you finally get it started is telling me I'm missing spark or fuel. So if I were the guy working on your car, I'd hook up a fuel pressure gauge. I would start it cold. I would say, hey, Corky, I want you to leave it overnight. And so the next morning I'd turn the key on and I'd expect my fuel pressure gauge to go and go up, let's pretend 45 pounds. That's the spec. So then I hit the key and boom, it starts right up. I'd go drive it for a little while. I'd come back. I'd shut it off. I'd walk away from it from the time it takes you to go into Circle K and buy a soda. Come back outside. I'd still have my fuel pressure gauge on it, and I'd hit the key. And maybe the fuel pressure takes a while to come up to 45. So I go, okay, I'm losing fuel pressure. That's what's going on, because once it gets to 45, it starts up. So then I look in my book, and I go, oh, it's got an external fuel pressure regulator. So I go over, and I pull the vacuum line off the fuel pressure regulator. It's full of gas. So the diaphragm's blown. Okay, I call you and I bid a fuel pressure regulator. That's how it would work. If I'm right, it's substandard fuel pressure, and you haven't said anything that would lead me to believe that it's a compression problem or that it's a spark problem. I really do believe that your extended hot cranking is related to the absence of fuel. Now, another thing you could do is if you know what's going to happen, buy a can of carb spray from your local auto parts store. So you know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So take the air cleaner off that thing and aim it at the air intake and go psst for 3 or 4 seconds. If it starts right up, then Mark is right. And it's the lack of fuel, and we just have to figure out why. Because you added fuel to it. That makes sense?
Yes, it does. I was thinking it was definitely a fuel problem, and somebody said, well, maybe I'm not sure if it's an electric fuel pump or not. Just turn on the switch for a few seconds while it builds up pressure. Well, that shouldn't have to be. So,
well, wait a minute.
That's right.
Wait a minute. I agree with that. Sometimes what happens is if you crank past, let's pretend, 3 seconds, the computer goes, oh, it ain't going to start, and it shuts off the fuel. It shuts off the electricity to the pump. So when you turn the key on, you're fooling the computer. You turn on the key and you go, not crank, just on. 1, 2, 3, off. Back on. 1, 2, 3, off. You do that 3 times. Then, boom, it starts right up. Well, you're repriming the system. So we're right back where I thought we were. We have a substandard fuel pressure on a warm startup. So
okay. By
cycling the key on and off is the same as you artificially inseminating it with carburetor spray. Okay. Same thing. All righty.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You bet. Bob, you're up next. How can I help you? Why don't we put Bob on hold, and we'll zip on by, and we'll talk to Kevin. Kevin, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Mark. Hey, I've got a an 03 Ford 4-liter V6. It's got kind of a rough idle to it.
Okay.
It really was not a problem, but then the throttle position sensor started going out, so when I had that fixed, I had them do a diagnostic on it, and it came up with misfire codes.
Okay.
So they said we should replace the plugs with iridium-type plugs, and I won't bore you with all I've done to it because it hasn't fixed the problem.
Yeah, I can imagine.
It keeps giving misfire codes.
Well, a misfire code doesn't mean that you need spark plugs or wires. And if it doesn't call for iridium spark plugs in the service manual, then I wouldn't put iridiums in them because they cost a lot of money. And unless your ignition system is designed to fire iridium spark plugs, I just wouldn't do it. So the real question is, in your case, is what are we missing? It's the same kind of thing. Are we missing spark or fuel? And if I was working on the car, I would take a gloved hand, and I would start the car up, and it would miss. And I would put my hand over the air intake to shut off some air to make it run richer, more fuel. And yeah. I would see if it smoothed out. Because a vacuum leak can cause a misfire. The EGR valve could be stuck open. That's going to cause your rough idle. But it's also going to cause a misfire because we've created a vacuum leak that's not only affecting the idle, but affecting the O2 sensor and it's looking like a misfire. So you can't jump on a misfire. You can't jump. But if you wanted to, and if it was cylinder 4 every time, then I'd take the spark plug out of 4 and put it in 5, and I'd put 5 into 4 and see if the problem moved. The same way with a wire. I would move a wire and see if the problem moved. And so as you go through this gyrations, if the problem moves, then you know that the problem is the plug or the plug wire. But if the problem doesn't move, then you know it's not. You stay there. I'll be back in just a minute. All about that. 34 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. I'm your host every Saturday right here on 960 The Patriot, and we're talking about car and car repair problems. Action Auto Repair is a great shop in Phoenix. I-17 in Deer Valley. Tom, I've known him probably since the early 80s. He's honest. He's dependable. He knows right from wrong. All the shops that I refer you to are shops that my mother would use. If my sisters had any brains, they'd use them too. But my neighbors, everybody, I know I can refer you to them with all the confidence in the world that you'll be treated fairly. So if you live anywhere near I-17 in Deer Valley and you're looking for a shop, they have ASE Master, Certified Technician, etc., etc., Action Auto Repair is the place. I would suggest that you stop by and see if you like them. So let's go back to the phone. Now, Bob, you stay there because I know that you're back. But, Kevin, I just want to cover one more thing. When you have, when this misfire occurs, can you always feel it, or does it come and go?
You can always feel it, the idle, when it's in idle drive.
Okay. All right.
You can feel it misfiring.
So when you get above idle, it's just as smooth as glass.
Yes.
And the rupida-rupida, and the miss is gone.
Right.
Okay. Did the professional install the throttle position sensor?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Okay. I think we're on the right track. The fact that the miss is only at idle and it doesn't translate to a high speed at 40, 50, 60, 70 miles an hour, that's kind of good. That eliminates, almost guarantees, it's not a mechanical issue. So okay. I think this is going to be easy. And I'll tell you, almost always in situations such as this, Kevin, the guessing costs more than the diagnosis. So, you know, we had a guy last week that did a $400 mass airflow sensor, and it didn't fix his problem. And the diagnostic on that car would not have been more than $200. I would be closer to $100 than $200, but he spent $400 on a guess on it. And I want to caution you about that. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, Kevin. Bob, good morning.
Good morning to you.
Go right ahead.
Mark, are you there?
I'm here.
Oh,
yes.
Okay. I was the other Bob, too, that called him in. I tried to get my phone off speakerphone and disconnected everything. Good
morning,
Dr. Mark.
It's okay.
Yeah, 98 Ford Ranger, no brake lights, replaced the sensor underneath the on the steering column. Mm-hmm. Everything else works.
Okay.
And when I jumped it across from the thing, the brakes worked, so the lights and fuses. Give me direction.
Wait a minute. You replaced the brake light switch, just has two wires.
No, this one's got a pin thing. It's got like five wires out of it.
Okay. So you replaced the brake light switch, and you don't have any brake lights.
Nope.
And so what did you jump to make the brake lights work?
I took the connector. It has five pins in it.
Okay.
Let's see. I forget the colors. I'm not right there. I know two of them are greens. But anyhow, I didn't do the greens. I used the chart to figure out which ones control the taillights, put a jumper in there and jumped, and I get brake lights. Otherwise, I get everything. Everything else, I mean, you know, okay. Normal turn signals, everything else works all the time. No
okay.
problem. Check fuses, everything.
Okay. All right. Well, let me think out loud here.
Okay.
You put a new brake switch in it, and that didn't fix it. But then you disconnect the plug, and you bypass the brake light switch, and you do get brake lights. As you can imagine, that doesn't make much sense because you put a new switch in it.
Switch?
Well, yeah, a bad new one? Okay. I mean, you could do that if you wanted to. But the brake light signal goes from the switch through the turn signals. And then it goes from the turn signal switch and disseminated to the two rears. We use the turn signal switch to interrupt it to give you a turn signal because that's off brake light, off brake light, off brake light is a turn signal. So and then you say you have turn signals, which means that the turn signal switch is connected to the tail light or to the brake lights because those work right. So then out loud I'm thinking, okay, we got the brake light, either the switch is bad, or this brake light circuit that goes from the switch to the turn signal switch is defective somewhere. But then when you jump it at the plug and you get brake lights, why would that say that the circuit from the switch to the switch, from the brake light switch to the turn signal switch, on one hand, it's not there, and on the other hand, it is there. And that obviously doesn't make any sense. We do know that from the turn signals backwards, we're okay. We're just having a tough time from the brake light switch to the turn signal switch. So I think we just need another pair of eyes on this. Because as I've just described to you, I think we got the problem between the brake light switch and the turn signal switch, but then you're saying that the turn signals from the switch works fine. And it's not going to be a ground at the socket on the back. That's craziness. That's not it. It's not going to be a light bulb because you said they work.
Right.
So I don't know the answer
to that.
I've done
what you're talking. I have read, research, and it's like crazy, where there is a problem sometimes on those particular models. Apparently there was a recall that the turn signal switch or that the connections inside there on the steering column at the top, that they had problems with some of that. And now my, cruise control went out regularly, too. Man, I got the new uniform. It just gradually wore out. You know, the buttons all wore out and punching them because I use it a lot. I love it. Is it possible that would have any effect?
Well, but wait a minute. We have the turn signal switch with an in and an out. You're saying the in is broken, but the out works. So if you had a harness problem coming out of the turn signal switch that's going to all four corners of the car, then you can't have it both ways.
Okay.
You can't. Now, it'd be kind of foolish for you to go out and buy a new harness and a new turn signal switch.
Oh, yeah.
No, I mean, and not to mention the fact that you're going to have a tough time fishing the harness down the steering column. So
tell me about it.
Yeah.
I didn't want to look at it.
But the cruise control is an interesting thing because a bad brake light switch would be your inability to cancel the cruise control other than shutting it off would be enhanced, would be there. On the other hand, when you cancel the cruise control, typically we're going to cancel the cruise control in the plug. As soon as we get the signal from the brake light switch that you've hit the brake lights, then the computer's going to cancel the cruise control. So I don't know what you're going to chase. You're going to chase that the cruise control doesn't cancel, or are you going to chase that you got no brake lights with the pedal? But I can't answer the question. But in a synopsis, again, you've lost the signal from the brake light switch to the turn signals, because you have the signal from the turn signals to the turn signal bulbs in the back. No, one other thing. Did you walk all the way around the car? Turn on the hazards and walk all the way around the car.
Yes.
Let's see if we got all four of them working.
All four of them work.
Okay.
Yes.
So I can't answer your question. I know where I'd start if I was working on it, but I can't answer your question.
Well, so. I'm going to do the, it was cheap, the, not trying to say, what do you call it, a cruise control, redo that. That's fairly easy, you know, to get in there behind that column there and put that in and see what that affects.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah.
I'm up in Denville, and I'm driving back up to, back down to Phoenix here real soon. Can't wait to get home. I'll tell you, I hate it up here. Anyway, I got to figure it out, because I can't go driving all that distance without brake lights. So,
yeah. Well, and the only other thing you could do is back up to a wall. One other quick thing, and then I got to go. You back into a wall, and you see that the brake lights are working or not working.
Yes.
And then
you
just
do that with you go up to a window somewhere, you know, a store window. That's
it doesn't really make any difference. Just get to where you can see the brake lights and turn signal switch.
Yeah.
And then beat on the steering wheel as you turn the steering wheel a quarter turn to the right, a quarter turn to the left, a half turn to the right, a half turn to the left. Beat on the steering wheel, and if all of a sudden the brake lights start working, then you're going to have to go into the steering column. And I got to go. We'll be back in a minute. Forty-five minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, my name is Mark Salem, and let me tell you real quick about the only shop in Mesa that I raise my hand and say they are a great shop in Mesa, and that's Thompson's Auto Repair. They're on Main Street just east of Stapley. Brian and Thelma have been there a long time, and both of their families have been in the auto repair business and in the gasoline station business since the late 60s and early 70s. So Brian and Thelma come from a long line of greasy hands. So if you're in Mesa, the only shop I recommend is Thompson's Auto Repair, Thompson's Auto and Repair and Towing, I should get that right, and he's on Main Street just east of Stapley. Jim, good morning. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark. Yeah, I have a question. My son's vehicle is a 94 Ford Explorer. It has an intermittent starting problem. We narrowed it down to a fuel pump. It has intermittent power that goes to the fuel pump. Like when you turn on to the on position, sometimes you got power there, and it'll start right up, and then it'll start for 10 times, and next time it won't start up, and there's no power to the pump, but there is power, like, to the fuel gauge.
Okay. Yeah, there's no relationship here at all. There's no relationship. If you turn the key on, and if you don't give it a crank signal for 3 seconds, it'll shut the pump off. So otherwise, if it doesn't see the car start, and the only other answer I could give you, Jim, is you're going to have to get a wiring diagram and find out where the fuel pump is. Now, let me ask you a question. You need to pull the owner's manual out of this thing, and you need to go to the picture of the fuse panel. And I think you're going to find a fuel pump relay, and I think you're going to find an air conditioning relay, and I think both of those are going to look exactly the same.
Okay.
I want you to switch the two relays. Now, as long as they look the same, pull A out, pull B out, and switch them. If that fixes it, then you have to make an extra donation to the plate the next time you're in a house of worship.
That sounds good to me.
And then if it works and works fine, then that fuel pump relay, and you said it's a 94, so it's not like it's a spring chicken. So, and the air conditioning uses that relay a lot less than the fuel pump. So switch those two relays and see what happens.
Sounds good. I'll do that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good luck to you. Thank you. Okay.
Yes.
Let me turn you on. Turn on your mic. Let me turn on your mic. Okay. If you're a business person and you own a business with computers, we've all heard of ransomware. And ransomware has been in the news a lot. And what happens is, someone sends you an email, you or one of your employees, and there's a link, and the link says, you know, Bethany thinks that you're her long-lost brother, click here. Or you want $1 million, click here. And when the employee or the staffer clicks there, then this bug has been added to your computer. Now, that bug's going to come alive in the next month or so. Then when it does, it's going to encrypt all your files, and you're stuck. You've lost your entire computer. But if you pay $10 to $3 million, they took down a city not too long ago. It happened in Gila County not too long ago. And the city on the East Coast paid $3 million in ransom. So it happened in Phoenix to a friend of mine. And it just shut him down. And when he called, they give you an email and stuff like that. And they wanted $40,000 worth of Bitcoin. So he wouldn't pay it, so he had to completely reconstruct, and he lost years of data. So the reason they don't make it, you don't get the bug on Monday, and then they kill you on Tuesday, because if you have a backup, then you can go back and get the backup. The problem is if we fire off this bug a month later, 2 months later, 3 months later, typically your backup is old. So I know at our facility, we've decided on a software called Sophos. I think I'm pronouncing that right.
I think so, too. I don't know. Yeah.
And we've also decided to do a backup, but then disconnect the backup drives from the server every time we're not backing up. So when they come in, you see, when they come into my shop, they're actually coming in on the server. We have three, and then we have, 20 workstations.
Mm-hmm.
And so it can contaminate everything in there. But if I've unplugged my backup, then it can't jump to my backup. So you have to be careful. And I think Malwarebytes is another software that we have been using, and they have an extra fee we can get ransomware. But my biggest fear is if they got me, that, I mean, it would just bring my company to the knees. You can imagine we'd have to go back to ordering parts by books. We wouldn't have the ability to write a work order. We couldn't get your customer file. We couldn't get your vehicle. We couldn't do it. Look at history. It would just destroy us. So if
your
business
charts would be gone.
Yeah, all my charts would be gone. all my emails to my girlfriends would be gone.
That's right. Oh, darn.
That's my wife aggravating me. But anyway, if you're a business person, you better talk to your computer IT people. Here's the good news. Tom, when he got taken to his knees,
mm-hmm.
I had said to him, you might talk to your insurance company to see if they're going to cover you, because this is damage to me by others,
mm-hmm.
and typically it's covered. Well, he called and the guy said no. But the other day he walked in and said, you write up a bill for everything you've spent,
okay,
and we're going to cover it.
Yeah, because I think we do have something like that for
problems. Well, he did.
Problems,
and
yes.
So he had to build new computers, and they had a backup from 6 months ago, and they did this and they did that. But now his insurance company is going to pay for it.
Well, that's good. But still, it's a nightmare.
It's a nightmare. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely a nightmare. And ever since I heard a good friend of mine had this happen to him, and Gila County,
mm-hmm.
they won't admit it. There was an article in the paper the other day that they had a problem.
Okay.
Well, the symptoms were everything to do with and they're going after the hospitals and the cities, and they're going after big dollars. So if you were to bring an electrical company to their knees,
yeah,
and they couldn't even bill people, they would pay millions of dollars to get that back.
Yeah.
So it's a bad thing. Hopefully our technology will protect us. But we have told our staff they may not click on anything from their workstations. They cannot go to their email, and they have to use their phones for all of their own personal stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they're going to open up an email, they do it on their phones.
Yeah.
Now, they could be just like your staff and say, okay, we'll do it, but not do it.
Right.
But you run that risk. So.
Yes.
Okay. Car repair is tough no matter what. If you have a question, you can always email me, and my email address is pretty easy. It's mark@marksalem.com. I don't talk about my shop because that's not what this show's all about. This show is about you, helping you, guiding you, telling you what to say, what not to say. But let me tell you what just happened. A really good friend of mine, Bill,
okay? Uh-huh.
He has a 200,000-mile Hyundai.
Okay.
And the other day, he's driving down the road, and it just dies, and he doesn't know why.
Mm-hmm.
So he takes it to a shop, and they tell him that the motor's locked up. And then they tell him that there is, in the bowels of our car repair, there is something that says that maybe Hyundai knows that there's a problem, and maybe they'll fix it.
Okay.
So this is what Bill just sent me, okay? I acted like a certain guy trained me to.
Okay.
Which is me.
You, yeah.
I'm sorry. Help me understand what this means. So that's what he's saying to the dealership.
Okay.
I've had a rental for 3 days, so what will be my out-of-pocket expense? You will pay nothing for this.
Hmm.
You will be reimbursed for your tow. You'll be reimbursed for the shop evaluation that your motor's blown. You'll be reimbursed for the tow from the shop to the dealership. Your rental car will be reimbursed. And if you find something was damaged because of the engine failure, Hyundai will repair that without any cost to you. Any damage repair caused to the engine failure. There's no deductible. Once they are done, I'm calling them that he's talking. Mm-hmm. I'm going to call your daughter, Mark, and have him look it over just to make sure everything's fine.
Yeah.
I've never heard of that before.
He
has 200,000 miles, and they're going to give him a brand new engine.
And he just died on the side of the road.
Yeah, yeah. But evidently, and I haven't done the research, evidently back there in the bowels,
yeah,
this is a problem.
How did he find that out?
Well, he didn't. The shop he took it to first,
okay,
said, in our investigation of your VIN number,
uh-huh,
there's this, and I don't want to use words, but let me just use a word that you'll kind of, there's this hidden recall.
Okay.
So, and see, I've said that when Hyundai and Kia first came out, in the 10, 15, 20 years ago, they were big pieces of horse, you know, manure.
Mm-hmm.
Today, they are really good cars.
Mm-hmm.
Really good cars. They're not the best, but they certainly deserve an A.
Okay.
Okay? They're not...
Wait, A's pretty good.
Yeah, A's pretty good. I was going to say, that. I don't know. I couldn't even give them an A+, because then you'd say to me, well, what is another A+? And I wouldn't have an answer for.
Well, yeah, and you said they're not the best, so
it's
what's the best? What?
That's it. That's
grade.
That's it. I'm going to give them an A, just like you said. I'm
okay.
Going to give them an A without any other explanation.
Okay.
There's other cars out there that are an A. Like my Dodge truck is an A.
Of course.
Of course it is.
My Ford Edge is an A.
No, it
A.
isn't. You can't use Ford and A in the same in my world.
I can.
You can. I don't care. I'm just amazed. And I said to him, be prepared for a depreciation here.
Yeah.
They're going to say, you got half of the life of the motor, which would indicate that they think it lasts 400,000 miles.
So exactly.
I don't know about that. And so you're going to pay half the bill. They didn't do that.
That's amazing.
This is a 200,000. This thing's bound around the world 8 times, and he's getting a brand new motor because something they did wrong. Ford, Chevrolet, Honda, Toyota, and Chrysler I've never heard them anything like that at all from them.
Yeah.
And see, the problem really is this. The engineers design the parts.
Okay.
And then the parts are put in the cars.
Mm-hmm.
Then the part has a pattern failure. The engineer says it's the customer.
Sure.
The engineer says it's not my fault. So there's this big battle goes on, and pretty soon the engineer finds out it is his fault.
Mm-hmm.
He designed it wrong. So now we have to send it out and have it redesigned. He'll redesign it. If not, hopefully he doesn't. Hopefully his boss does.
Mm-hmm.
So this part is now made.
Yeah.
We're going to put a new part on the road. Now we have to let everybody know that the part on their car is good, is a bad part.
Mm-hmm.
Now, should we really do that, or should we just handle them at a onesie by twosie time?
Obviously, what they chose to do.
Huh? Somebody chooses to do that.
Right.
So they don't raise their hand, but Hyundai's raising their hand and saying, we messed up, this is ugly, we're sorry, we're going to make it right. That's
yeah,
what happened.
But they're not raising it to everybody, so that's a little bit suspicious.
Not necessarily. He said they didn't question anything. They didn't ask him if he was the original owner. They didn't ask for maintenance records. They didn't ask for nothing. They just said, we're going to put a new motor in it. We're going to cover your rental car, and we're going to cover all your toes.
And maybe it hasn't been that many that they've had to do, so
I
don't know. But
stop taking the thunder away from them.
I'm sorry.
They're doing something that nobody else has. In 39 years, I've never seen this happen.
Yeah, but how many people might have had this problem and they didn't know about this?
You know what? There's a little due diligence there when you have a problem like that. You can't lay in bed and figure that somebody's going to tell. All of a sudden, God's going to come to your head and say, hey, there's a secret recall.
Mm-hmm.
You got to go do a little work yourself.
Okay.
Oh boy, I'm not having you on the show no more. It's tit and tat and left and right, and it's okay.
I just
though.
Have to make sure you know what you're talking
it's
about.
It's okay. That's fine with me. That's fine with me. Anyway, mark@marksalem.com. This isn't about my shop. This is about you. That's the reason why I don't even tell you what my shop is at. But God bless you. Drive safe. And don't forget to ask lots of questions when your car repair shop, like, what symptoms are you going to fix when you do all of this work? That's a great question. See you next week.